Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to the CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome back Tim Fields, who's the Senior Associate Dean of Undergraduate Admission at Emory University in beautiful Atlanta, Georgia. Tim, welcome back. How are you doing today?
I'm doing wonderful. Always happy to have this conversation with you. So thank you for the invitation back.
Thank you again for recording episode number 68 with me, which received so many downloads that it was also used as episode 150 as part of the Playback Wednesdays that we do in the summer. And again, thank you for returning, Tim. So what can you tell us about any new initiatives or changes going on at Emory since you and I last spoke?
Yeah, I'd probably say the biggest area that we are, kind of delving into is AI, like everybody else. And so there's some growing programs in conjunction with our computer science program with AI. I'll also say on the campus life side, we opened up our new identity spaces, which are spaces that, are, geared towards Asian Americans, Latinx, Hispanic students, Black African American. There's also, a women's center for students who, identify as that, but are not limited to that. So obviously any students can utilize the space. But, in an effort of inclusivity, we want to make sure that students from all different backgrounds have spaces that they're comfortable on our campus.
Well, we appreciate that. And I love how you talk about AI in your programs. But Tim, as a follow-up, just curious, what about in the admissions office, right? Any changes going on with being worried about students using AI to generate their essays, for example?
No. I mean, I think, we actually did an exercise at the beginning of the season to where we had, an AI essay, and we had an essay that was, crafted by a student, and everybody was able to see the AI versus the one that was crafted by the student. And so, I think given the selectivity that we are at, AI is not going to produce an essay that's going to move the meter. It's going to be a very well-written essay. It's going to be probably factually correct on whatever the topic is. But is it going to have the soul? Is it going to have kind of the unique characteristics to make a student stand out in this process? It is not. And so, I think, we are happy to say utilize it as a brainstorming tool if you want to kind of get some ideas out there. But we don't have anything to where we're going back and, checking, running it through a system or anything like that. We still have a staff of a little over 30. We review every application. We review the application the holistic way and to which where we can get all the information. So there's nothing new that we're doing surrounding AI. But I just think given the selectivity, an AI produced essay is not going to stand out just because it's going to be very general and vanilla at best.
Understood. And we appreciate that. And we're definitely going to come back and talk a little bit more about essays and supplementals. But you mentioned the applications. And of course, the number of applications schools are receiving, Tim, continue to be on the rise due to reasons such as the Common App, which of course streamlines how students apply. And of course, the test optional nature of college admissions. Tim, can you share how many applications Emory receives? And what is your institutional priority in terms of how many students you want in your freshman class?
Yeah, I think Emory is unique in which it has two undergraduate campuses. We have our Oxford College, which is the original founding place of Emory, which is roughly 45 minutes away from Atlanta. And so that first year class is going to have around 500 people. And so then we have the Atlanta campus, in which has 5,500 students. And then that campus, we usually bring anywhere between 1,450 and 1,500 in the incoming class. We received over 35,000 applications this year. And so it's very, highly, competitive. Our admit rate for regular decision was below 10%. For early decision, it was below, right there around 18 to 20%. We can talk about those differences a little bit later. But all that to say, is that, you know, we, you know, are looking for students on both the Oxford and Emory College campus that are, you know, going to add to the community, that are academically prepared, that are curious, that have different, you know, interests. So, you know, as we go about this, when you apply to Emory, you're applying to both places, both Oxford and Emory. And if you want to be considered at both places, you can, you know, keep your application at both places. But there are some students who say, I only want to be considered at Emory College, the Atlanta campus, or I only want to be considered at Oxford College. And you can, you know, make those changes in your portal when you apply. But yes, overall, we are a more selective campus. And, you know, of the 35,000 applications we receive, you know, a very small amount of those students are actually going to receive admission. And so we don't have any caps. We don't say we can only accept so many students from a school or anything like that. But we are looking for students that actually can really kind of fit our community. And we have a very diverse community in, you know, every way you can imagine. And so these are all things that we're looking at. We're looking at, what are students interested in studying? Where are students, you know, coming from? What do students do outside the classroom? What is their academic potential? And all several other things that kind of factor in to the decisions we make using the holistic review.
Well, I appreciate that, especially the fact that you talk about that you don't have so many caps, right? You're really looking for a student that, number one, is going to be able to handle the work once they're on your campus, but also, you know, what are they interested in? How are they going to contribute to that beautiful community that we call Emory University? And I mentioned that because I read recently that your retention rate, by the way, Tim, is at 95%, which represents the percentage of all the freshmen that return after that first year of college. What is it about your academic offerings, Tim, and your extracurricular activities and, frankly, overall school community that makes students happy while wanting to return?
Yeah, I think there are several factors that, you know, kind of, you know, attribute to that. I would say the first and second year students are required to live on campus. And there's a lot of research out there that supports that if students live on campus their first and second year, the probability of them graduating on time is significantly higher. So I think there's the community that is created during that first year. I would also say that, you know, we have, you know, advising that takes place when students come in that helps them think about what classes they can take, provides them some guidance as far as, you know, how to take a course load. We have a freshman seminar, which all first year students are required to take, which is going to be a smaller class in which they can kind of get to know students and, you know, in this process. And then I would say overall, you know, I think we provide an environment in which students, you know, can have a balance between, you know, obviously their coursework and their academic work that they're here to do, but also enjoying over 400 clubs activities on campus, the city of Atlanta. And we're a very community oriented campus. I think, you know, I've been at Emory almost 20 years, and I would not describe the community as competitive. So it is a very collaborative place where people are very supportive of one another. And then also we want to make sure to provide resources for students. So if you have, you know, need academic support in the form of tutoring, we have a free tutoring program. We have a writing center. We also have a counseling center. We very much want to support students' emotional and mental health needs. We have, you know, other, you know, kind of community, you know, based programs as far as, you know, learning, especially in the STEM fields, which we're really known for. So, yes, we want to kind of wrap our arms around students, make sure they can academically do well, but also give them the support outside of the classroom to ensure that they are successful in all facets of their life.
Well, we appreciate you talking about that collaborative but non-competitive community with over 400 clubs. I love that students, and you're right, there's a lot of research that supports it. Living on campus that first and second year, it's so important to, frankly, immersing yourself in everything that the campus has to offer while building those friendships that hopefully will last, you know, beyond the 4 years. Obviously, you also have a lot of academic programs that are terrific. Business, nursing, biological sciences, comp sci, poli sci, and philosophy, just to name a few. So, Tim, with so many more applications, and I'm willing to bet that the vast majority are from more viable candidates than your seats available, how do you determine the percentage of students to accept, waitlist, or even deny?
Yeah, so I you know, we don't ever go into it with this is the number, these are the percentages. You know, I think most of the time it really just kind of shakes out as far as knowing what we're looking for in a class. And it all begins with the academic preparation. we want to make sure that students are academically prepared for Emory. And what that looks like, it, you know, depends upon what school students are coming from. So, you know, if a student has a school, does an AP school, are they taking those AP courses? Or if they're at an IB school, are they in the IB diploma program? Maybe the school has dual enrollment. Maybe the school has its own particular type of curriculum, but we don't compare high schools. We say what was available to you at your high school, and then we want you to take advantage of that. So we're not counting APs. We're not saying you need to, want you to take these courses. We want you to take courses that, you know, you feel that you can do well at, that ultimately are going to prepare you to come, you know, to Emory. And then I think after that, we will obviously want to look at what are you doing outside the classroom. And, you know, there are students who are very involved in lots of different things. And there are students who are very focused on one area that they are passionate about, which is fine. You know, there are students who have to help younger siblings, elders in the home. So the extracurricular activities cover the whole gamut. Then obviously we require 3 letters of recommendations, 2 from teachers, 1 from a college counselor. Emory, if you want to send additional letters of recommendation, you can. We would just recommend that those letters of recommendation be somebody who's going to provide a different perspective. If you provide, you know, a different additional letter of recommendation from a teacher, they're going to say that you're smart. We established that from the first 2 letters, your transcript. So we see that. And then for this upcoming cycle, we are test optional. We're still evaluating, you know, what's the best way to use test scores in the process. And so we have maintained for this upcoming cycle for the class of, 25, that we will be test optional. And then, you know, more to come. Hopefully, if you invite me back next year, I'll have an update for you. and then I think, you know, the last piece is, you know, the writing. And I think the writing is going to be very, you know, critical, because with 35,000 applications, to your point, most of them are very viable. The student's voice, who they are, is going to make them kind of, how do you stand out in that process? And so, you know, we go about, we review it. If we see a good student, we admit them. You know, if we see a student that, you know, is right there on the margins, or maybe we would like some additional information, their senior year grades, or some additional information, we'll, you know, waitlist them and see if we can get that information to see if we can make a final decision. And then, of course, there are going to be students that we know are not going to be competitive in this process, and then we're going to outright deny those. Then, you know, once we get kind of towards our early decision one, early decision two, regular decision classes, and we have a better goal of how many people we can admit, then we go through committee work. And that's when we begin crafting the class based upon those institutional priorities, academic interest, geography, extracurricular activities, how these people are going to contribute to the community. You know, what individual characteristics are they going to bring? And then we start crafting, knowing the limitations we have. But we go through this process very thoughtfully at every single admission deadline, thinking about the overall class that we want to create. It's nothing that's driven by test scores. It's nothing that's just driven by GPA. It's nothing that's just driven by accolades. It is truly a holistic review, and where we're looking at all of these things to build a class. And I like to say that, you know, we are one of the more selective schools in the country. And so selective college admission means that we have a class of about 1470 to 1500 at Emory College, at 500 at Oxford College. We are specifically going, looking at each student saying, I think you can add this to our community. I think you can add this to our community. So a lot of times, unfortunately, when, you know, students don't get in, they're looking for, was there a reason that I didn't get in? And the reality is oftentimes there's not a reason. If you wanted to say there was a reason you get in, there's just limited space. We can't accept every great student. There are students who have 4.0s, 1600s, 36s, presidents of clubs who don't get in. And it's not because of anything that they did. It's just in our, as we're going about this process, we're looking at who are the different voices we want to put together to put together the best class possible for Emory University. And that always doesn't encompass who was the smartest in the class. It always doesn't encompass who was the most involved. It encompasses what we feel is best for our community, and we go about that in a very thoughtful process.
Well, I appreciate you talking about the fact that you get over 35,000 applications. Most of the students are, in fact, viable candidates, but you talk about the fact that people that have perfect ACT or SAT scores, perfect GPAs, they don't get in because you have over 35,000 applications. Most of the students are viable, and yet it's a very small percentage in terms of what that institutional priority is or the space that you have in terms of that freshman class. But you also talked about your holistic approach, right? The academic preparation is very important, and it is based on your high school, right? The context of what is available to you. Tim, you're saying that you're not comparing the high school down the road to the one, you know, that one student may go to. You're also talking about the important stuff that students do outside of the classroom, because again, like we said earlier, you want to make sure that you're accepting students that can handle the work, but also what have they done outside of the classroom that's going to help you determine the type of roommate they're going to be, the type of classmate they're going to be, the type of community member, and how they're going to contribute to that beautiful thing we call Emory. And I also, you touched upon it where you talked about really quality over quantity, right? You don't have to be in 10 clubs. If you're in just a few and you do them well, that's fine. And also you talked about taking care of a family member. And I'll throw in also, if you happen to have a job, students, those are things that people like Tim really need to hear about to determine the type of person you're going to be once on their campus as part of that holistic review. Is that true, Tim?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, overall, a lot of times, you know, students think, you know, yes, it's an academic, you know, it's driven by your academics, but ultimately we're trying to build a community here. We're trying to have different people with different perspectives that are going to, you know, have different conversations in the classroom, who have different upbringings, who are going to be different talents. And some of those students are going to be very well-rounded. They're going to do lots of different things. And some of those students are going to say, no, I am specifically interested in physics. I want to come and study physics. Everything that I do surrounds the area of physics, and we call those pointy students. So yes, there are several pointy students, there are well-rounded students, and there are students who dibble and dabble in different things. And then also in this process, we understand that students are 16, 17, 18 years old, and they may be just trying to explore different things. And so there's no cookie cutter way. There's no formula. They, you know, at the end of the process, when you go look at all the people who are admitted, you know, you could sit back and say, you know, is there a rhyme or reason why these students are admitted? And the one consistent will be their academic preparation. But after their academic preparation, there be maybe any number of reasons that these students are admitted, because we are looking for students who are going to create the best community for Emory University.
Well, we appreciate that. And let's unpackage it further, Tim. Obviously, the transcript is the most important piece of the application in terms of the academic portion. Can you walk us through what are you looking for when reviewing a student's transcript, and how does it change based on their intended major? In other words, if someone's applying to the School of Arts and Sciences as opposed to someone else, you know, going to your nursing school, how does it look? How do you review it differently?
Yeah. And I just want to, you know, continue. I don't want to, you know, beat a dead horse, but, you know, your academic preparation, the courses that you take are going to be the driving force in this process. But ultimately, given that Emory has so many applications and the selectivity of it, we want to make sure, one, that you have done well. So, you know, I'll say most students who, you know, apply to Emory and are admitted to Emory for the most part have done well throughout. We do look at upward trajectory. We understand that, you know, first of all, we don't look at first year grades. So we don't look at the grades your freshman year as you're transitioning from middle school to high school. We recognize that's a transitional time. And so when we look at your transcript, we're going to recalculate it, look at your sophomore, junior, and senior year grades. Now, your freshman year grades matter in the context of how it prepares you for sophomore, junior, and senior year. But when we recalculate, we're not going to look at that. So there's the possibility the student could have not done that well sophomore year. And then, you know, junior year, they increase their rigor and they you know, their GPA is going up. Senior year, they're you know, doing the best. And as you're coming into college, that's the preparation that we're looking for. But by and large, most students have done well throughout their high school career. Now, where, you know, you don't apply to a college at Emory University, obviously Emory College, Oxford College, but you're not applying to a specific major. We're going to ask, what are you interested in on the common application? So you're going to have to express an academic interest, but we know that may change. However, given about 70% of the students at Emory are interested in STEM fields, in business, if you do say you're interested in biology, chemistry, neuroscience, and behavior biology, business, some of our more popular majors, the expectation is that you have taken some classes in those areas that are that you are going to be prepared for. So, for example, if you say you are interested in majoring in biology at Emory University, you went to a high school that has AP biology, AP chemistry, AP physics, AP calculus, and you did not take any of those courses, we are going to question your preparation to go into the STEM field. So we are going to, you know, ask that, you know, if you say you're interested in those areas, that you have taken some classes that are going to help you be successful in the case that you do apply to those areas. Just last week, a parent and student were visiting, and, you know, they were asking the question about, you know, their senior year. They say, hey, we're interested in studying business. And, you know, our college counselor told us that they should take AP biology. What do you think? And my question is, you don't need to take AP biology if you're interested in business. We don't want students just be taking courses for the sake of taking courses if you're not interested in them. But I did say, if you're interested in business, I would hope that you have taken AP calculus. I would hope that you have taken AP macro and micro, because this they share with me they're at an AP school. And I was familiar with the schools and know they had a lot of AP offerings. So, yes, if you're interested in business, we would, you know, hope that you would have taken those courses. Not a requirement, but because of so many students are interested in those areas, if it is available to you, we just want to make sure that you are preparing yourself for the, you know, academic interest that you are going into in this process. So that is something that we are going to hone in on, especially for those students who express interest in those areas. On contrast, we understand some students don't know what they want to do. Like some students are truly exploring and trying to find different things, and we can see that. But, you know, I would be remiss, John, if I didn't say there's a lot of people who try to be very strategic in this process and say, hey, I'm interested in philosophy, but then they take all STEM classes. They're doing biological research in the summer. You know, they, you know, kind of write their, you know, essay about kind of their interest in science. And everything in the application says that you're more than likely you're a STEM kid, but you're trying to say, oh, I heard not as many people apply in philosophy. I have a better interest. There are going to be certain consistencies that we're going to see, be able to see. So, you know, put your best foot forward. Know we're going to understand your application. Know and understand that, you know, some students are trying to feel their way, and there's some students who are have a razor focus. And these are all things that we are going to factor in our holistic review.
Well, Tim, we really appreciate that. And I just want to repeat a couple of things. Number one, you do look at the ninth grade grades, which are important in terms of helping students to build ramps, right? Whatever you do in ninth grade, that's going to help you in 10th grade and beyond. So again, you do look at the grades. They're very important. But in terms of when you recalculate the GPA, you're not using the ninth grade grades as part of that GPA calculation. You also talk about a student that might be interested in business, right? Pursuing a business major eventually. And they were asking, do I need to take AP bio? The answer to that is no. However, if you're interested in business, courses like calculus, AP micro or macro are certainly very important if in fact your high school offers those courses. And I also appreciate the fact that you talked about a student that based on your holistic review, you looked at the courses that they're taking. You're looking at the work that they did outside of the classroom, perhaps over the summer. Everything was pointing to the STEM field, yet this student was saying that they're interested in pursuing philosophy. So as part of your holistic approach, sometimes you get that red flag indicating that maybe someone is trying to game the system because everything that they're doing is pointing to STEM, but perhaps they're saying that they're interested in philosophy, thinking that that's one way that they could game the system because perhaps not as many students are applying to Emory as a philosophy major compared to your STEM fields. Is that correct, Tim?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we appreciate that. And Tim, in our last conversation, you spoke about how Emory is test flexible, meaning, for example, that students may submit things such as their AP scores if they are available at the time, of course, that they are submitting their applications. So, Tim, can you give us an overview of your test optional and test flexible policies while sharing the percentage of students that applied and who were admitted without submitting any test scores at all?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, for the next cycle for the class of 2025, we are going to be test optional, meaning that, you know, if you want to submit your SAT, ACT score, you absolutely, you know, can. But then, you know, also if, you know, you say, I would just want to submit my AP scores, you can do that as well. So it's truly up to the student as far as what you think, you know, will make your application most competitive as pertains to test scores. But to be very clear, if you don't submit them, that's absolutely fine as well. I think in this past cycle, roughly about, 30% of the students that were admitted to Emory did not submit any scores whatsoever. So, yes, there are students who are getting into Emory who are not, submitting, any test scores. But to be very clear, the 70% could either be submitting SAT or ACT scores, or they could also be submitting, AP scores. So it's really up to the students as far as what you think makes you look best. And then, I'll just add this editorial. Right now, if people are submitting test scores, they have done very well on the test. So when you see the middle 50th percentile for 1470 through 1500 are 33 and 34, those are in the top percentage of test takers in the country. You know, what I would say to students, if you scored a 31, 32, that is an excellent score. That is not going to, be the detriment of your application if you want to submit those. If you scored a 1350, 1400, those scores highlight that. We've said it many different times in this podcast. Your classroom work is the most important piece of this equation. What you have done throughout your high school career, day to day in the classroom, through your tests, through writing your papers, through your engagement in the classroom, and the grades you receive is the most important piece. Too many times people get kind of bogged down on this testing when I can assure you, in my 20 years that I've been doing this, testing has never been a determinant on whether or not a student was admitted. Now, it's a factor, similar to what do you do outside the classroom, similar to what people are saying about you, similar to what you're writing about. It is just one factor. But I just try and, tell families not to, put so much emphasis on what this test score means or does not mean when what you've done in the classroom is by far more important.
Well, I appreciate that. And it definitely makes sense, Tim, right? Because you have 4 years of high school, right? And so that transcript is going to show you, what did you do in ninth grade? What are the ramps that you built to lead to 10th grade, 11th grade, and on and on? So, that's 4 years of work as opposed to one test. So it makes sense that, that transcript that represents all the work that you did, as you put it, in the classroom is certainly, the most important factor, particularly when it comes to the academic portion of the holistic review. And of course, Tim, the essay, another important part of the application, as it gives the students a chance to have their authentic voice heard, is certainly another piece, right, of your holistic review. Tim, can you share an example of an essay that really stuck with you and stood out over the rest while perhaps explaining why?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we talk about essays, I think the most important thing is that you personalize it, that you make it uniquely your own, that, you are showing, individual, characteristics that you, have as far as what makes you unique and different from other people in this process, especially given the amount of applications that selective schools like Emory are receiving. This past cycle, I always hesitate on saying what essay stood out because then students think they need to do that. I think there, was one essay in which, for whatever reason, a lot of students want to talk about things that they do, whether it be sports, whether it be play instruments, whether it be, work or whatever they do, they want to kind of write about that. And so this particular student, wrote about, running and running cross country. But as opposed to kind of talking about the wins and the losses and kind of the training, what they did was they wrote about it from the perspective of their shoes. And their shoes told a story about how they had to get up and then run in the morning. And then they sat around and didn't do anything all day. And then they got picked up in the afternoon and how wish they would, get washed or get some new shoelaces. And, they just, talked about the ups and downs of kind of the running process and, how much they learned about the running process from a different perspective, which was very, kind of creative and stood out a little bit. Still had the same kind of athletic type of essay vibe to it. But what it did do is it provided a different perspective. It caught, you know, my attention. And then it also provided a lot of personal attributes about the student, which goes back to the kind of the personalization of this. You know, what I tell students is that if you apply to a place like Emory, the reality is more than likely you're not going to be the best at anything. You're not going to be the best athlete. You're not going to be the best debater. You're not going to be the best instrument. Like you're not going to be the best. And that's not being harsh. It's just the reality is that given that there are so many people applying that have so many great, you know, accolades, the one thing that you can be the best at is be the best you. So I encourage students that as you go about thinking about what you want to write, to say, what are the things that I can add, that I can share, that I'm going to attribute to this campus that nobody else can? And that requires a different level of introspection and looking within, as opposed to I'm just going to regurgitate what I did outside the classroom, because everybody is great in these applicant pools, but you are the best you. And that's what, you know, I would want students to highlight in their application to make them stand out.
Well, that's great insight, Tim. Thank you so much. And I also know that Emory, along with many other competitive schools, ask for supplemental questions to be answered as part of their process. Tim, what is it that you are looking for in the supplemental questions that is not necessarily available in other parts of the application? And what advice would you give students to consider when preparing these answers?
I think the supplemental are the questions we're really trying to get to know who you are. Obviously, on your personal essay, you're going to spend a lot of time crafting that. And that essay, you know, many times is going to, you know, going to be razor sharp and perfect. And you're going to, you know, go over every word to make sure you're going to articulate whatever you want to share through your personal essay. But in the supplements, you know, we truly want you to have fun. We truly want to get your, you know, your perspective. I mean, it's not as many words as a personal essay. So we want you to kind of get to the point quick. So, you know, I would say one, have fun with them. Two, do not overthink them. And three, just know there's no particular answer that we are looking for. We really want to know who you are. And, you know, if there's anything that, you know, you all take away from this podcast is that, you know, we want students who are going to come to the campus and be uniquely themselves. And they're going to let their personality shine and they're going to share. Because a lot of times people go through this process is like, oh, what is Emory going to provide me? How is Emory going to provide me, prepare me for my life, you know, after college and for my job and my career? When the reality is you are going to come and add a lot to Emory. And so we want to know, what are you going to offer the institution? What are you going to, you know, have to make this place a better community, make this place a better place? So these are the things that we're thinking about, you know, in this process. And that's why it's important that, you know, you really just be uniquely you. You know, there's no, like, for whatever reason, students want to say, oh, you know, what's your favorite work of fiction? Oh, I'm going to talk about Good Will Hunting, about how academically astute he was, because that's going to stand out. No, I may say, you know, your favorite work of fiction was Kung Fu Panda. Like, that is what you're interested in. That's perfectly fine, because you are going to share why that was, and it's going to shed some light on who you are. So who you are as a student is very, very important in, you know, in the application. And so I encourage students to not, you know, try and write for what you think we want to hear. We just want to know who you are.
Well, Tim, you're awesome. And these have been some tremendous insights. I really appreciate it. Before I get to the last question, I just have to ask, is there a question I didn't ask or a topic that I didn't bring up? And we brought up a lot today, and I appreciate that. But again, is there a question I didn't ask or a topic that we didn't bring up that you'd like to share with us now?
You didn't ask. I think you alluded to it. But, you know, I just like to be very clear to families, to students who oftentimes have this belief that where you go to school makes a difference in this process. And the reality is you have to make the most of the opportunities at whatever school you're at. So if you go to an independent school, we don't have the belief that an independent school is better than a public school. And somebody who goes to public school knows somebody than is homeschooled. What we are going to say is, did you take advantage of the resources and the opportunities that were afforded to you at the school or the education that you have gone through? And so there are too many instances where people say, oh, I went to this school and I had, you know, an A and a couple B's, but, you know, the student down the street, they had all A's, but that school's not as hard as my school, or they looked at differently. And the answer is, I don't care what happened down the street. I care what happened at your institution, which you did based upon what was available to you. And so, you know, obviously, you know, parents are going to go through this process and they're going to, you know, if they have the option to put their students in the best academic environment as far as to meet their needs. But I just wanted to kind of dispel this myth to say one school is better than the other, because that's not how we look at it in this process. We truly say, what was available to you, and did you take advantage of the resources at the school that you were at?
Well, we appreciate that, Tim. And this has been a theme that comes on over and over again in the podcast episodes, which, again, students, it is based on the context of what is available at your high school. How did you challenge yourself? How did you build those ramps over 4 years? What did you do to take advantage, again, to everything offered to you in your high school? So, Tim, we really appreciate that. Unfortunately, it does lead us to the last question, which is, what are your top three pieces of advice that you would provide students and their parents getting ready for the college admissions process?
Number one is to have fun and enjoy this process. That senior year of high school should truly be a fun time. And, you know, you should enjoy it. You should take classes that you're interested in. You should not get so bogged down in this college admission process that you don't have fun. Number two is you need to expand your list. You know, there are over 4,000 college universities in this country. 2,000 offer bachelor's degrees. And for whatever reason, an emphasis is on 100 of those. Most schools in this country admit the majority of people who apply. And so too many times people get caught up in specific type of institutions who have very low admit rates and are wondering why there's so much pressure in this process. There's not a lot of pressure in this process. It only comes if you limit yourself to these schools that everybody's applying to. So keep an open mind, knowing that, you know that, you know, there are a lot of schools that can offer you a great opportunity as far as an education. So, you know, that is number two. And the last piece is something that is very, very near and dear to me, is I want you all to redefine success. And what I mean by that is I want you to find success based upon what is going on in your home. That don't compare yourself to others. Don't worry about, you know, what others are doing, you know, what people in the previous class did. What is success to you? Is success, you know, getting into a school that, you know, your parents went to? Is success getting, you know, scholarships in which you're not going to have to pay for school? Is success, you know, just graduating from high school and having opportunities available to you? But, you know, I want success to be determined what's going on in the walls of your home and not comparing yourself to others. And then also parents not allowing your egos to drive this process and doing what's best for your children. So I want success to happen based upon what are the needs of the student, what are the finances of the home, and what are the things that is best for your family, and not letting other things determine it, like rankings or what other people did in this process determine what success is for you.
Well, we appreciate that, Tim. Number one, have fun. Let's not forget to have fun during this process, because it is, in fact, just that, a lot of fun. Don't limit yourself. Again, there's over 4,000 colleges and universities throughout the country. Not every school is for every student, but I will tell you that for every student, there is more than one choice out there. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of choices for each and every student. And redefine success for yourself and your family. I think those are great pieces of advice, Tim. And Tim, before we sign off, I know that I saw you at the NACAC conference down in Baltimore, and all of a sudden I'm walking around and I see this huge line and everyone is leading up to you and your co-author for the book that you wrote. Could you just give a little shout out to your book, which, by the way, we're going to be doing an episode specifically about your book coming up in the future. But Tim, just tell everyone about the book that you co-authored.
Yeah, thank you for asking. So we co-authored a book, me and Shereem Herndon Brown, a book called The Black Family's Guide to College Admission, A Conversation About Education, Parenting, and Race. It is actually this past January of 2024, released its second edition, as we wanted to talk about the Supreme Court decision. We wanted to talk about AI and essays and how those kind of, you know, will continue to impact admission moving forward. And we wanted to address mental health in the college admission process. And then obviously we wanted to make some updates to some other occurrences. And so, you know, while the book, you know, the title would say that it's specifically for Black families, I think the book is really for anybody who's going through this process, because 70% of it provides insights with a lot of the things that we covered, you know, on this podcast. So it's available. It's one of the top selling admission resource guides. So I would recommend anybody pick it up, because there's a lot of information regarding timelines, testing, when to visit colleges, applying to schools with special talents, and a lot of other great information that is not specific to any race or ethnicity, but really kind of highlighting things throughout the process. And then obviously mental health, you know, has no color. You know, essays isn't limited. The Supreme Court decision is going to affect everybody. So we just think it's a great resource. So thank you for the opportunity to share a little bit about that. And I look forward to our conversation in the upcoming weeks.
Yeah, no, it's my pleasure and honor. And like I said, you know, I'm just about finished with it. I'm on the last two chapters, Tim. And the three of us are going to get on a podcast episode to speak specifically about that book. So everyone listening in, stay tuned and look out for that episode, which I know is going to be awesome. Tim, you're awesome. I'm so glad that you came back. I'm so glad that you are a mentor to me and, frankly, a colleague and a friend. Thank you so much. You're amazing.
Hey, man, happy to be here. You know, always available to you. Continue to utilize me as a resource with students. I'm always excited when students come visit Emory and they tell me you sent them down. So, hey, back at you, man.
Well, thank you so much, Tim, and to everyone out there. Good luck with the college search. Best wishes to all. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.
Thank you for listening to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to PrepExpert.com to guarantee your child's success.